A couple of years ago, me and my girlfriend, now wife, were selling some of our old stuff after moving into another apartment. And one of these items happened to be our big old TV. We put one ad up on eBay and another on that Facebook Marketplace thing, since it was kind of new at the time, and just decided to wait and see what kind of offers we got. My wife was pretty sure she found a decent enough buyer who'd come pick the TV up from our apartment and save us a job. But I've gotten a message from someone who, although they couldn't quite afford our asking price, made us an offer we couldn't refuse. It was from an older guy who seemed to be living on his own with his dog, whose TV had recently broken and he couldn't afford a new one. He said that he could pay about 70% of our asking price and would make the rest of it up to us in plumbing services, should we ever need it. I ended up getting into a long, touching discussion with the guy. It kind of reminded me of an old uncle of mine, and I just instantly liked him. He'd fallen on hard times, and through no fault of his own, if anyone deserved a little kindness, it was him. After a brief discussion with my wife, we decided that we'd just go drop it off at his house for free. However, we also knew that there's no way this guy would accept our charity right off the bat, or at least very little chance of that happening anyway. So when he politely asked us to wait 3 weeks to drop it off at his house, since it had taken him a little time to get the cash together, we were only too happy to oblige him. But still, we make a note of his address and whatnot, then tell him we'll call in a few weeks. A few weeks goes by, and we decide we'll drive the TV over to the guy on a Saturday morning. Before we leave, we give the guy a call to tell him we're on our way, but there's no answer. We try once or twice more, but still the guy isn't answering his phone. Now this might sound kind of selfish, but the TV was all boxed up and just taking up space in our hallway. So even though the guy wasn't picking up his phone, we decided to drive over anyway and possibly leave the TV with a neighbor of his. I mean, that method seemed kind of preferable to us too. If we left it with a neighbor, we wouldn't have to go through all the potential awkwardness of refusing to take the guy's money. Anyway, so we drive over to the guy's address, keeping the TV in the car while we ensure that there's definitely no one home. I get out of the car, walk up this guy's driveway, and knock on the door, which gets no answer. Right then is when I lean back and look into the guy's front room, you know, to check if there are any lights on or anything. God knows the guy might have been a little deaf and just couldn't hear his phone or the door. But as I look at his front windows, I see all these little black spots all over the blinds and on the windowsill. I'm like, what is those? Thinking they might be bits of dirt or something. Then one of the little dirt pieces just straight up moves, in that lightning quick stop-start way that insects do, and that's when it hits me. I'm looking at about 50 houseflies, big fat ones too, that are grouped together on his window. It's weird how we can see one housefly on a window pane or a window ledge and be like, that's a fly. But when we see so many in one place, it's like our brains just don't quite compute what our eyes are seeing. That kind of brittle sense of perception that humans have never fails to creep me out. Like most people reading this, I instantly knew what was wrong, and this horrific sense of dread came over me. I think I might have involuntarily let out a, oh God, oh no, when the penny dropped. You only ever get a concentration of flies like that when there's either a massive buildup of garbage or something had died. And in that case, someone had died. And horrifically, it was the older guy we'd grown so attached to throughout the saga of getting rid of our old TV. The whole thing was just horrifying. From having to call the cops to the fire department showing up with them to bash the guy's door down. When they did, the smell started to drift out into the street, and it was just about the most stomach-churning thing I'd ever experienced. I know the guy wasn't exactly my best friend, but I feel like even though we only swapped a few texts and calls with the guy, we got to know him pretty well. He was good-natured, independent. I'm pretty sure he was a veteran, too. And the whole thing really shook me up. Those flies, man. Those fat, carrion flies that were so big and engorged that I barely even recognized them for what they were. They'd been breeding and feeding in the rotting flesh of the same guy I'd been having heart-to-hearts with just weeks before. It's just scary to me how death is sometimes. Like, yeah, the prospect of what happens to us when we die is daunting enough, but it's how sudden and seemingly random death can be, with all its grim little details. Like, I couldn't shake the image of those flies on the window, like they were his ghost or something. Maybe we do leave a little something of ourselves behind when we die, but that thing happens to be so very, very ugly. Okay, so back in 2016, the Xbox One S came out, which was basically just an Xbox that was 4K capable. Now, this isn't to be confused with the Xbox Series X and S that just came out last year. This is a couple of years ago when that Facebook Marketplace had just started. I picked up one of the newer editions of the console, so I was looking to get rid of my outdated one. Facebook Marketplace seemed like the easiest place to do that since I didn't have an eBay account at the time, so yeah. Long story short, that's how I opened myself up to one of the creepiest experiences of my entire life. So I post an ad for my vanilla Xbox One, set a reasonable enough price for it at about $100, then just sit back and wait for the inquiries to come in. As you can imagine, the internet didn't fail to bring out all the anonymously abusive weirdos who told me $30 would be more than a reasonable price, and could I drop the console off at their house, which, in one specific case, happened to be in the next state over. Basically, no one made any serious inquiries, which I figured. It was a 4-year-old console at that point. I was going to be pretty lucky if I could manage to sell it at all. Which is why, when I got a message from a kid's mom, saying their kid was really sick and could I perhaps work in a discount for them, I just thought, sure, why not? The first message from the kid's mom was incredibly long and was basically this big sob story about how their 10-year-old had this rare disease that they only had a slim chance of surviving. I forget the name of the disease, but I copy-pasted the word into Google and it was actually a legit disease which has some pretty grim-sounding symptoms too. I probably shouldn't have called it a sob story, but that's exactly what I thought it was at first. But when I messaged back and forth with the lady, then I realized how something that was a throwaway thing for me might actually make her entire family's life so much happier. I went from weirdly indifferent to being seriously invested in this kid having a Christmas he'd never forget. So, after a couple of days of talking back and forth with this lady, I decided, screw it, I'm just going to give it to her for free. I didn't really need the money, and besides, I could just sit pretty on all the good karma I'd earned. It's kind of embarrassing to admit how far down the rabbit hole I was with the whole thing. Like, I even went out and bought some bubble wrap and some upmarket cardboard packaging designed for shipping electricals. I wanted to be that kid's Santa that year. And it's crazy to admit, but my charitable little scheme really did have me feeling good about myself. Which I suppose is why, when it started to unravel, I just didn't want to believe it. When the time came for me to get this lady's mailing address, there was a couple of inconsistencies that grabbed my attention, but that still didn't raise my suspicion right away. For example, at first, she gave me one address, then she gave me another when I asked her to confirm. I did actually confront her on it, but she said she was living in an apartment complex where people would steal packages. Obviously, neither of us wanted to risk the Xbox being stolen, so she'd given me an address for a friend of hers who could safely deliver it to them. Totally believable excuse, right? She was a single mom, living in a rough neighborhood, and I was lending her a helping hand. Or maybe I should have seen the red flags right there, but was just feeling way too saintly and smug to do so. The thing that tripped it up was that the lady had mentioned her kids starting some kind of medical treatment for their illness. She mentioned a particular date that it was starting, and that turned out to be the very same day I was about to post the package. I have the console all boxed up, along with the controllers, the wiring, and a few games that'll be suitable for that kid's age, I thought. I figured it must have been a stressful time for her. Seeing her kid getting poked and prodded by all kinds of medical professionals was probably weighing on her mind, and I thought mailing the console on that particular day might really cheer her up. I tried to keep the whole thing a surprise, but I've never been very good at keeping my mouth shut. What can I say? I wanted to bask in the glory of my own generosity a little. So I send the single mom a Facebook message like, "Hey, posting the package today. Just wanted to make sure I have the right address." She then replies, "Oh my god, you've just absolutely made my day. You're such a sweetheart." Cue some blushing for myself, and I reply, "No problem. Hope it makes it over to you, okay?" Then she replies, "The timing is amazing because Franklin starts his therapy next month." Next month. I go back through the conversation to find the message where she said it was on the 25th of the month, that same day we were texting. Obviously, I'm pretty confused by this, and I still don't have any major suspicions, so I'm like, "Oh, I thought he was starting his therapy today." She explains, "No, it's next month," almost like she hadn't told me the 25th at all. Only when I confront her about it is she like, "Oh yeah, we had to move some dates around. My bad for not telling you." But my spider senses are actually tingling at that point, so I decide to ask her if there's anything she's not telling me. She obviously responds no to that, but I decide it'll be better to just talk to her on the phone, so I insist on calling her. She answers her phone, so I know she's a real person, and she sounded kind of busy and impatient, so I figured I'd just gotten her at a bad time. Everything would have gone out without a hitch if she hadn't made one fatal mistake. Right as I'm about to hang up after apologizing for taking up her time, she says, "Freddy will be so happy with the Xbox." Freddy. She's been calling her kid Franklin for a week now, and suddenly it was Freddy. I'm not even sure she could like blame autocorrect. It was a freaking phone call. I called back and just straight up called her bluff. I didn't know it 100% at the time, but I sure acted like I did. I just told her that I knew she was a scammer and that I'd be reporting her to the police. There was some mild resistance at first, a few weak denials here and there, but I could hear the thin veil of her wholesomeness beginning to slip with every accusation. And eventually, she snapped. And when she did, it was so vicious that it actually shut me up for a minute. It was a complete Jekyll and Hyde transformation from this sweet single mom character she obviously just invented to the soulless fraud she really was. Even though I just figured her out, she called me a gullible moron for believing her in the first place, called me sad and pathetic and a bleeding heart for wanting to give away my stuff to a kid that probably wasn't going to live to enjoy it. In this savage tirade, she told me people like me would always be worthless and pathetic, dumb saps that were nothing but marks. I just tried to keep calm and told her I'd be reporting her to Facebook, along with sending a screenshot of her profile and display pictures to the police, all before circulating her profile around some of the more populated Facebook groups I was a member of to warn them of potential scams. But of course, it wasn't a real profile. Of course, she had like 20 more, at least that's what she said. But my profile was real. Everything I told her about myself was true. The psycho knew what I looked like, she knew where I lived, she knew all sorts of things about me, and I knew absolutely nothing about her, other than she was willing to stoop lower than low to get things she wanted. And on top of that, she wasn't above making some hideously graphic threats of violence against me and my family. And stupidly enough, this was back when I had my sister and my cousin listed in my profile as immediate family. And that's what got me the most, that I'd been dumb enough to serve up some pretty intimate family connections on a silver platter. The scammer told me I was truly stupid if I thought the cops would be able to do anything about her. And on the off chance that she did hear from the police, she'd send her boyfriend after my family. Now, I don't know how genuine of a threat that was, but just the fact that she had access to their profiles made me feel anxious and incredibly guilty. If they ended up getting hurt because of something I did or didn't do, I don't think I'd have been able to live with myself. Obviously, the whole thing ended when I blocked the scammer and got in touch with my cousins and sister, telling them to make their profiles private. I was honest with them, told them how I'd fallen victim to a scammer and that I was worried their personal information might be compromised. After all, the scammer had just assumed someone else's identity in terms of their profile pictures, possibly even their name too, and the idea of them using any of our pictures to set up a new scam profile made my skin crawl. That whole thing was by far the worst experience I've ever had on mine. And not only am I really, really careful now when it comes to interacting with internet strangers, but I seriously advise all of you to be too. A little while ago, I saw an ad on Facebook Marketplace where a woman claimed to be giving away free gerbils. Apparently, the boy-girl pair she owned had produced a huge litter of little gerbil babies, and since there was way too much for her to handle, she was just going to give them away to a handful of loving homes. The ad didn't include the grim little factoid that the gerbil mom would probably eat her babies if she didn't think she could take care of them, but I figured, so I got in touch. The woman turned out to be a widow who had originally bought the gerbils to keep her company. I did think it was kind of unusual that she didn't just get herself a cat or dog if loneliness was the issue, but hey, different strokes for different folks, right? I'm not one to judge. And she seemed so sweet when I called her to arrange a date and time to go pick up two of the gerbils. Needless to say, I did not expect her to be living in the conditions she was. Because when me and my dad arrived at her home with a little straw-bedded cage to take the gerbils home in, the whole exchange took a turn for the worse. So, we called over at the gerbil lady's place, and at first there was no reply. Then when she finally answers the door, we can see she's in quite a sorry state. One of her eyes is swollen and bloodshot, with some super gross-looking yellow gunk collecting in the corner of the eye. But we remain polite and just ignore it. The last thing me and Dad wanted to do was offend or upset the lady by pointing out what was an already obvious medical condition. But when she invites us inside, we get a clue as to how she got sick in the first place. Her little house reeked like it was the single worst stench that ever graced my nostrils, and there were gerbils everywhere. And I mean everywhere. And much like their owner, they were not in good condition. Just from the gerbils that were skittering around the kitchen, I could see that many of them were missing fur and patches, or had painful-looking growths around their legs or backs. Then when she invited us into her TV room for a cup of tea, we could see it was even worse in there. We had to make up some excuse about how we couldn't stay for long after me and my dad shot each other a telepathic look that basically said a giant nope. And with the amount of gerbil poop that clogged up every little corner and skirting board, it was absolutely no wonder that she had some kind of infection. And when I caught sight of an actual tiny rodent skeleton behind one of her curtains, I went into full improv mode to get us out of there. I turned to my dad, named some piece of important gerbil habitat that we hadn't picked up from the store yet, wink wink, but then agreed that, oh, we can't possibly bring home the gerbils without insert name of doodad here, and we'll have to call by again in a couple of days. I remember us both sitting in the car afterward, just kind of in shock at what we'd just seen. The fact that someone could live like that was just depressing and terrifying to me. She obviously had no one coming to check on her, and anyone who thought it was okay to keep a home like that must have been losing their marbles. It sucked having to make a decision like we did. I felt really mean basically snitching, but we just had to call Animal Rescue, for her benefit more than anything else. The ASPCA rep we spoke to said that they'd investigate and let us know what their call was going to be, and in the end, they got back in touch, thanking us for the tip. Not only was the gerbil lady now in touch with a local charity that would help check up on her in her twilight years, but her house was considerably cleaner and safer after they've cleared out almost 100 gerbils from her property. They said the situation was so bad that the only thing that kept the infestation from spreading were the neighborhood cats. I did remember seeing a bunch of strays hanging around outside, but I figured it was just because she was the local animal lover who would routinely feed them treats or whatever. Turns out she was breeding treats for them, just not in the way she might like to think. The creepiest thing about it was that, from standing outside her home, you'd never have guessed at the horror show waiting for you on the inside. And the whole thing just reminds me that we don't really know what's going on behind closed doors, even the ones closest to us. Behind the facade of normalcy, we have no idea what our friends and neighbors are up to, or what nightmarish conditions they're living under. My dad was a guitar player. It was the only real skill he had, but I suppose that suited him because music was his entire life. He made his living playing in various bands all over Kalamazoo, and to this day I ain't ever seen no man pick bluegrass like my daddy. You'll have to excuse my phrasing there, but my dad grew up in Kentucky, and he brought all that southern up with him when he and my mom moved up here. I was into metal and stuff as a kid. Used to go to Detroit to catch Cannibal Corpse shows, but it was my dad that gave me a love of bluegrass. But as you can imagine, being a lifelong musician meant that my dad went through some pretty hard times financially. And at one point, it looked like we might actually lose the house. We were saving every penny. My mom was working double shifts, and my dad even got a part-time job tending bar, but it just wasn't enough. Now, my dad's favorite guitar was this old Martin that looked about as old as the hills. Like steaks and whiskey, acoustic guitars are always better when you age them, so to speak. A kind of character or soul gets all up in the body, something that gives the sound a richness. It's kind of hard to describe, but my dad's Martin had it in spades. I've never heard a guitar make as sweet a sound as that old Martin, and he adored it. But the thing was, nothing else we had would fetch as good a price as that guitar. And as much as it broke his heart to do it, it was either sell the guitar or put his family at risk. So, my dad being my dad, he sells the Martin, case and all, for like $5,000. After that, things started looking up. We managed to keep the house, dad started getting gigs again, mom got a promotion at work. It took like 2 years before we were back on our feet, but we managed it. It was around this time that dad started getting these headaches that we just put down to stress. He was working his butt off trying to put food on the table, so it was no wonder he was beginning to feel the effects. The headaches got so bad that he finally agreed to go see a doctor. And then right when we needed it the least, right when things are actually looking up for the family, boom. My dad gets diagnosed with a brain tumor, an aggressive one too. Doctor gave him 2 months to put his affairs in order. And after he passed, I missed him real bad. So bad that I actually started pestering my mom for who he'd sold his old Martin to. I felt like getting the guitar back would bring me a little piece of dad back, but to my disappointment, mom had no idea who he'd sold the thing to. It had been years and it wasn't like dad kept much in the way of records. It sucked, but eventually I just sort of resigned myself to never seeing it again, and I suppose that was just part of the whole grieving process for me. Years after, I'm living in Detroit and trying to make a go of my own music career. Me and a few friends are out drinking, just stumbling from dive bar when we come across this lady who claimed to be a psychic. When I heard that, I just took it to mean some old barfly who'd thought of a novel way to talk her way into a free drink or two by tickling your palm and telling you you're gonna be rich. But this lady wasn't some scam artist. She seemed to genuinely believe she could read us, as she put it. She starts telling my friend how he's going to hurt a lot of people, more than we'll ever be able to forgive him. We just kind of make a joke out of the whole thing. The guy was a pussycat, the last person to ever get violent or whatever. Then, to keep the joke kind of rolling along, I ask her to read me instead. She looks me up and down, seems to study my hairline intently for a moment, then says, "What you're looking for is in your pocket." Only things I had on me were my keys, my phone, and a pack of smokes. That's it. The only thing I was looking for about then was a lighter, and I certainly didn't have one in my pocket. Next morning, I had a hangover so bad it could have killed a small child. I just lay in bed for like an hour, scrolling through social media on my phone, checking out the photos from the night before and trying not to hurl. Then as I'm scrolling, I see the little tab for Facebook Marketplace and think, I'll check it out. Then when I start browsing musical instruments for sale, it only takes me about a minute before I come across something that almost knocks me out of bed. A guy was selling a guitar that was the exact same make and model as my dad's old favorite. I'm lying there, looking at all the photos of it, noticing all the little dents and details that are just screaming, "I'm your dad's guitar." And then I see the case, and I swear to God, my freaking head just started spinning. Anyways, the guy was selling it for way more than I could afford, but it didn't take much to convince him to arrange a kind of payment plan with him, given that it was of massive sentimental value. Getting it back was like having Dad's ghost floating around whatever room you played it in, and my mom burst into tears the first time I played her one of his old tunes on his old Martin. But how is all of this creepy? I'm probably hearing you asking. The whole psychic lady thing is pure coincidence, and besides, she wasn't right anyway because your friend didn't turn out to be a serial killer, right? Right? Well, yes and no. But it's this part that makes that old crazy lady's prediction seem so horribly prophetic. About the same time I'm being reunited with my guitar, my drinking buddy got into a little accident at work. Nothing too heavy, but he did need to be prescribed some painkillers so he could get back to work before his comp ran out. He was never quite the same after the accident, but we figured that was down to the pain and being out of work for so long. Over the next 6 or 7 months that followed, he started losing weight, taking random days off of work, disappearing over the weekend. Money started going missing out of his and his wife's bank account, then jewelry and electronics started vanishing. We should have known what was happening, but at the same time, I'd never have pegged this guy to have that kind of personality, and his wife actually had to catch him using for us to realize that he was addicted to opiates. Over the next few years, my buddy fulfilled the crazy lady's prophecy by wronging or pushing away almost every important person in his life. I let him stay on my couch for a couple of days after his wife finally kicked him out for emptying their savings account. But after he stole from me too, I just had to show him the door like everyone else had. Last I heard from him, he was shacked up with his new junkie girlfriend somewhere in Chicago. A couple of months later, I hear from his ex-wife that he had a warrant out for his arrest. Cops said his girlfriend had OD'd and he just dumped her outside of the hospital. She died right there on the sidewalk. When that crazy lady said, "What I was looking for was in my pocket," there was no way she could have known about my dad's old Martin guitar, and there's no way she predicted I'd use Facebook of all things to find it. She was kind of wrong about my pockets that night, but she was kind of right too. But with regards to what she said about my buddy, she was exactly spot on. I'd only assume that she was wrong because I couldn't see him hurting anyone on purpose. He was just too gentle of a dude. I was fixated on deliberate physical violence to realize that he was playing out her predictions to the letter. I don't believe in the paranormal. I don't believe in psychics or ghosts. Heck, I'm not even religious by any description. But that night we were drinking, a crazy old lady told us our future, and whether I want to believe it or not, her predictions came true.